Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh, my God. You hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
Happy Lincoln Park Bar and Grill Trivia Wednesday. Each and every Wednesday, we drop the Lincoln Park Bar and Grill Trivia question at 5:20 at the end of this first segment, so you can hit up Brian during the break. 843-652-3776 is the number. Put it in your contact so you are ready to go. It's a tough one today. I'm not taking it easy on you guys. I am going to consider giving hints later if nobody can get it. But it involves Coastal Carolina running back D'Angelo Henderson and the record that he broke last Saturday. Now, World Series Game 1 last night was pretty entertaining for a number of reasons. And taking a look at all of the different storylines in play today, it's kind of crazy to think that Hosmer, the first baseman for the Royals, was almost the GOAT. He botches that play at first base and allows the Mets to take a lead. And ultimately, his teammates bail him out. They go into extras, and he hits the game-winning sac fly. So that's a pretty interesting story. And this is him after the game talking about how they were able to overcome his earlier mistake.
It's time for you to do your part. You know, everyone else on the team has been stepping up. Everyone's been doing what they can for us to win this ball game. And obviously, it came down to me right there, and that was the reason why that run came in the first place for them to go ahead. So it's just time to do your part.
That's KC.com with the audio. And rarely do you get to see within the same game someone who makes a potential series-altering blunder actually get redemption. Like, you really hate it for a guy to make that big error, and that's what he's known for forever, right? Like, people that are my age don't know that Bill Buckner was actually a good baseball player. They just know that he was the guy that messed up the 86 World Series for the Red Sox. Like, that guy actually had a very good career, but that's what he's known for. And Hosmer, in Game 1, you probably don't get that kind of reputation if the Royals lose that game, but that's kind of what he was up against. I mean, really misplaying that baseball, almost costing his team the game, and because of him, he ends up hitting a game-winning sac fly and they win. Also, as my producer Brian Nelson points out, he did a pretty substantial bat flip on that sac fly, and nobody is talking about the ethics of his bat flip and whether he should be hit with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball today. I don't know. I guess Joey Bautista's was a little more flagrant.
I mean, he actually hit a home run, though, so I don't really get it.
Yeah, you got more respect for the homer than the sac fly. But to me, by far, the most interesting story was how bad of a day... I shouldn't say how bad of a day. How big of a nightmare it was for the Fox broadcast team. Not just having to deal with the blackout, the guys in the studio not being prepared to carry segments of the show that they didn't know they were going to have to, not just the backup crew having to go in use and not knowing when their power was going to go down also, but before the game started, Fox was presented with the information that Game 1 starter for the Kansas City Royals, Edinson Volquez, that his father had passed away earlier in the Dominican Republic, and they didn't know whether or not he knew. And it's kind of hard to tell whether Volquez actually knew before the game started, because he left in the sixth inning after he got done and went home with his family. So he was not there for the 14-inning affair last night. And it's unclear. Kansas City manager Ned Yost believes that he did not know. He was told by the family that his starting pitcher did not know that his father had passed away earlier in the day, and the family wanted him to go out and pitch that game carefree without having that on his mind. And so he finds out, theoretically, that's what we believe, when he goes back into the dugout after his six-inning, three-earned-run performance, solid effort, that his father's passed away, which is a terrible thing to be presented with right after a start in the World Series. But Fox has this information, and it's on Twitter. But they're sitting there saying, ethically, do we air this? Because the last thing we ever want is this guy to find out on the mound. Somehow, some fan tells it to him. Well, it's the Twitter era. Some fan could have told it to him. The last thing they wanted to know, have happen is because of their broadcast at some point in time, a guy find out that his father passed away and not have it be from his family, have it be from some random way of finding out, whether it's a player on his team, whether it's a fan, whatever. And it's a nightmare situation for Fox. But I kind of think in the social media era, there's no way that information's keeping secret. Like a number of the newspapers and other media outlets decided to not pick up the story. But once something's on social media, it's exploded. And I mean, heck, the guy could have just opened up his phone and found out by accident. I mean, maybe when you're starting game one of the World Series, you're not checking Twitter 10 minutes beforehand. Although Josh Norman, I would imagine, checks Twitter during games. I'm not certain on that, but getting his tweet response rate's pretty high. And they were just put in such a bind. And not only that, so was Royals manager Ned Yost, because Volquez is probably somebody that he cares deeply about, someone who he believes is good enough to be his game one starter in the World Series. How about that for an ethical dilemma? Not tell the guy, or tell the guy. And do you tell him to go ahead and take the day off and he'll start game two, or ask him when he wants to come back and start with the team? You leave that up to him? Because if you don't tell him, it almost looks like you're doing something self-serving. But Ned Yost was asked by his family not to tell him, which puts him in such a huge bind. And what Ned Yost ended up doing was telling Chris Young that it happened, the only Royal, because he said, hey, Chris, you're going to get the start tonight if for some reason Edison can't go. And Chris Young ends up being the hero in extra innings. He throws three innings of no-hit ball. And he was put in that a similar position, having lost a parent earlier in the season.
Ned told me probably an hour and a half to 2 hours before the game. He said there's a chance that you might have to start tonight, and kind of put me on standby. So mentally, I just at that point tried to get in my normal routine and be ready. Absolutely. Yeah, I think it was almost, it might be a month ago to the day that I had to pitch after learning about my dad. And I'm not sure if Eddie knew or not. But regardless, I know the pain he's going through right now, and certainly he's in our thoughts and prayers.
That's such a tough situation to be in, because he's got to carry that knowledge and not know whether or not his teammate knows. And he has to go about his warm-up activities like he might actually start without it being that conspicuous. And it ends up, I mean, who knows? Maybe that's why he pitched so well in extras. I don't know the difference between a guy going through his warm-up as if he were going to be a starter rather than being out in the bullpen. I have no idea about the differences there. But his readiness ends up becoming a factor for Kansas City. And it just, it's such a nightmarish situation. Like one of my favorite shows that we've done since we've had this time slot was, might have been the first or second week we were on air, the Super Bowl was coming up. And Richard Sherman had said he was not going to play the Super Bowl if his girlfriend went into labor. And we had a number of guys call up, and everyone was like, oh, it's the Super Bowl. It happens once. You can have more kids. Or some people were like, how dare you? You only have, you know, life is precious. How you can't miss that if you're the father. And then finally, I think Eddie called up and said, you know, I'd ask my wife. And I was like, man, Eddie, you win. You're the only person that thought about communicating. But this is such a more sad situation. It's not, you know, it's not life beginning, it's life ending. And I mean, I have no idea how sick his father had been, or if Edison knew it was coming immediately, or whether he wanted to know, or whether the father wanted him to know. It's such a myriad of conflicting information and emotion. And I'm just curious, like, if you guys were Edison Volquez, would you have preferred to know and then go out and start game one? 843-652-3776. It's such a complicated situation, because I've been trying to think about this myself. And I had, not with my father, but with my grandfather, I actually had a similar situation happen to me. And I'm going to get into that story here in a second. But Brett Favre is kind of the iconic moment we have of someone dealing with a loss and going out and playing incredibly well. He had 311 yards in the first half of Monday Night Football. And three first-half touchdowns against the Raiders right afterward. And then there's Tiger, who in 2006 clearly wasn't able to handle it, missed his first cut in years, playing his first term after his father passed away. So different people handle this situation differently. I just, you know, what would you like to know? And I was put in a situation. I was a junior in high school. And I'm going to try to get through this story. We might have to take a commercial break and talk about, I don't know, football, sports, something else after this. But I was a junior in high school, and I was warming up for a mile on the track. And I end up getting a text message, I get a call from my dad, and it's like 15 minutes, 10 minutes before I'm supposed to go out there and compete. And I'm like, man, why the heck is my dad calling me right now? This makes no sense. He knows. Doesn't he know that this is important? And he says, I need to talk to your mother. And I instantly, just bad news alarm goes off. And she was being the fantastic mother that she is. She was out there timing, helping put the meat on. And I hand her the phone, and she, instantly starts breaking down. It turns out it's her father, who was getting ready to go watch me run and just collapsed, heart attack. Wasn't the healthiest guy in the world, but, he wasn't in a hospital. We had no idea it was going to be then and there. And at that stage, I had like 10 minutes before my race started. Like, I had my uniform on, I had my spikes on, and just had that choice just thrust on me. I didn't really have much time to think about it, whether I was going to go in the car with my mother to go see my grandmother, or if I was actually going to compete. I just thought, well, this is what he was actually getting in the car to do. So I'm actually going to do that. And I actually ran a personal best in the mile, which is kind of a crazy thing to think about. But again, in that position, there's not really much thought put into a track competition. I mean, no disrespect to anybody that ran track out there, but when you're in a distance race like that, I mean, man, you're just putting one foot in front of the other, crossing the line before other people. It's not like, okay, it's a 2-2 count, one runner on, two outs. What am I throwing in this situation? It did not require intense mental focus, and it was just, 4 minutes and some change, so it didn't require all that much time. So it's certainly easier than trying to play 18 holes of golf or trying to go out and throw 6 innings of starting pitching in Major League Baseball. But it is interesting because it puts the athlete in such a dilemma, because Volquez probably was like, he's worked his entire life to get to a World Series and doesn't want to let his teammates down. But at the same time, it's just like, man, how can you not want to know that happened? So it ended up being really a tough and interesting drama in that regard, and he ends up starting the game that his team wins. So that's good. I mean, you want that guy to win in that situation. Even though he doesn't get credited with a win, he throws 6 innings and gives up 3 runs. But, if anybody wants to weigh in on that, it's a tough subject. But what a tough position for not only Fox to be in, the manager to be in, and potentially the pitcher. 843-652-3776. Now, what is interesting, and I just told that story about my track career, sometimes it is crazy in life how simple, small decisions end up affecting the rest of your life. That decision that I made to actually go out there and run, which was kind of a 50-50 decision without even really thinking about it, later that evening when I went to do my cool down after I had competed, before I went to be with my family after that race, there ended up being a kid came up to me and said, hey, can I run with you right now? Are you Lewis Woodard? I want to meet you. Because I was probably the best runner in Charlotte at that time. And it turned out I was a junior in high school. He was a freshman. He wanted to just know how I trained and that kind of thing. I ended up mentoring the guy a little bit. And it turns out he's one of my 2 or 3 best friends in the world. So it is just kind of crazy to think that if I had done the logical thing and just found out of my grandfather passing away and not competing, I never would have met someone who now is one of my best friends. It's just kind of a crazy way that life works. Not typical sports radio. I just felt like it tied in today. 843-652-3776 is the number if you want to get in on that. And our second topic today, I find this to be very interesting. Dan Mullen was at his weekly press conference. Dan Mullen is the head coach for the Mississippi State Bulldogs in football. And he was asked a general question about an injury. And before we run with this audio, I have no idea whether or not there is a beef between Dan Mullen and this particular reporter, or if he has had injuries for his players reported on incorrectly. I have no idea. But a reporter just asked a head football coach, a college football coach, about an injury. And this is how Dan Mullen reacted today at his weekly press conference.
You may have answered this already, but do you expect maybe Gabe and
Wallace? I expect everybody to play. And I'll never comment on an injury again, because you guys obviously don't need me to comment on injuries, because you know more than I do. And you report more than I would ever say, for the benefit of young people's benefits, not get a scoop out for their futures. So we'll never comment on an injury in this program again, so please don't ever ask.
We will never comment on an injury again? And accuses the reporter right there of saying, you just want to get a scoop out. You don't care about the young man's future. I have a big problem with this. I really have a big time problem with this, because the NFL has a system where teams have to release injuries. That's why, and anybody that plays fantasy football knows, the sliding scale of probable, questionable, looking at those different classifications that the NFL has, it's actually an NFL rule. You have to disclose injuries. The Jets had a NFL investigation on their hands when they didn't disclose Brett Favre's biceps tear, because they have an obligation for the media to know and the athlete to know that there has been an injury disclosed. And Dan Mullen, I think, really makes himself look like an ass by not being straight up about one of his players' injuries. And here is why it bothers me, because these are amateur athletes. And if they choose to play through an injury, that's their choice. They're not getting paid for it. They're incredibly young. They're fired up. They want to help their teammates win. But it's one thing if a professional plays through an injury that might even be serious. But to me, we probably should know when an amateur athlete is going through an injury and playing, especially as young as guys are. And it's difficult to make that decision. And I think it puts a heck of a lot of pressure on the athlete to say, you know what, I'm not playing this week, and have that be the first time you're greeted with that information, right? Remember how many South Carolina fans were furious when Jadeveon Clowney didn't play against Kentucky, and it was the first time they knew that he really had a rib problem? They're like, oh, wait, he's not playing this weekend? And if it had the NFL system of, okay, well, he's questionable because his ribs hurt, and then you find out that he doesn't play, there's not that kind of anger. And I just think that you should be straight up about injuries. And you might say, okay, well, he might be afraid that guys will target his ribs if they disclose that information. It gives your team a competitive disadvantage. It puts the player in harm's way. But football is a straight up dangerous sport. I mean, if you're just trying to get out there and make tackles, like if you're trying specifically to target somebody's ribs or ankles, you might actually miss that hit and the guy might be downfield. And maybe I'm naive, maybe guys target injuries all the time, but I just actually think it puts the young person in a worse position to not have his injury disclosed. And I think there's just a layer of transparency that needs to be there. And not only that, fans are interested in this information as well, and a big reason why Dan Mullen makes $4 million a year is because the beat writers out there supplying the fans with stories. And if you think that your team is going to lose because you've lost an advantage on film of tipping your hand who you have or who you don't have, maybe you should just be a better coach. Maybe you should find ways to win without having to trick people as to who's available and who's not.
And when you don't disclose the injury, it's going to leave room for speculation. And then, say, take the Bryan Edwards injury, for example. Everyone obviously normally thinks torn ACL, torn MCL when someone goes down with a non-contact right. injury like that. And that's, time-wise, that's a more serious injury than what's happened. So that could affect, in this scenario, his recruitment,
right,
his enrollment
right,
at South Carolina, and all that stuff. So if you don't tell them exactly what it is, I mean,
yeah, no, I'm totally with you. That's a slightly different situation because Bryan wasn't going to play again this season. But yeah, I get what you're saying. 843-652-3776. JC is on the line. What's up, JC?
Hey guys.
What's up with you, man?
Not much. Listen, I wanted to Dan Mullen. I mean, that his reaction really kind of just confirms his status as a jerk. Let me just say this. Dan Mullen is using the work of his quarterback, Dak Prescott, to potentially parlay that into a better job or a raise. And Dak Prescott's not getting paid anything. The person who benefits from potentially hiding an injury of his players is Dan Mullen. the reporters who report it aren't anymore. They uncover that one, you know, DB or running back or wide receiver has an arm injury. Okay. Dan Mullen could potentially benefit by playing to other ones known to the so that Mississippi State might have a better chance beating Auburn, or Mississippi State might have a better chance beating Arkansas or Alabama and winning eight games. The only person who is potentially damaged by reporters uncovering injuries is the man who's making money off the backs of kids who aren't getting paid. Dan Mullen, shut up. And because it really irritates me when somebody says something like that, because it comes off as an arrogant, you know what. And so for me, I think Dan Mullen, you know, needs to look at reality and realize that the only reason he doesn't want people to know about players being injured is so he can continue to potentially use them when they're hurt and claim to have no knowledge of it. So that's my take on it. Let you guys talk about it.
Amen. JC just brought that heat stronger than I did. But I'm going to react to some of the things that JC said there next segment. But right now it's time for our Lincoln Park Bar and Grill trivia question. We do Lincoln Park Bar and Grill trivia on Wednesdays because, hey, that's when they do in the restaurant. $25 cash prize for the winner. It begins at 8 o'clock. Lincoln Park Bar and Grill is located in Surfside Beach across from Queens Harbor. Now, D'Angelo Henderson, he breaks the FCS record with 21 consecutive games scoring a touchdown. 21 consecutive games, D'Angelo Henderson scores a touchdown. This is the record-breaking trip into the end zone against Monmouth this week.
Here you go, fourth down and goal. Big, big play. We got Oshamar Anhop in there. Crowd on its feet. Out of the I formation. Alex under center. Top sweep coming right. Hop tries to get the corner. Turn, there's the record and a touchdown for the Chanticleers. Hop Henderson into the end zone once again, and there's your FCS record.
Joe Cash and Chanticleer Sports Network. Turns out that touchdown was much needed as the Chanticleers only win by 3 over Monmouth, 23-20. But 21 straight games is the FCS record. It is not the NCAA all-classification record for consecutive games with a touchdown. Who holds the NCAA all-classification record for most consecutive games with a touchdown? This is a brutally hard question, but you will know who it is when you hear the name. It's not somebody you've never heard of. It was done at the Division II level, and it is a current professional running back who has the NCAA record. Who has the NCAA record for most consecutive games with a touchdown? 843-652-3776. Winner will get a $25 gift certificate to Lincoln Park Bar and Grill. It's coming up next in Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
Man, I try and come up with difficult trivia questions. And I shouldn't have put the hint out there, but three people immediately, like the second we signed off and went to break, Gabrielle hit us up at 843-652-3776 and dropped the answer. So D'Angelo Henderson scores a touchdown in 21 consecutive games, which is an incredible feat. The actual NCAA all classifications record, because Hop just has the FCS record, is owned by Danny Woodhead, who played at the Division II level for Chatterton State. First of all, I don't know where Chatterton State is. I thought about Googling it during the break, and I just didn't do it. I just didn't do it, guys. I failed you guys. But Chatterton State is where he went, and he scored a touchdown in 38 consecutive games. So D'Angelo Henderson now has four more regular season games as a redshirt junior. So that could potentially get him to 25. He has anywhere from 1 to 5 FCS playoff games. So that could get him to 30. And then he would have 8 regular season games next year. So they would have to make a nice playoff run, and he would have to, as a redshirt senior, continue producing at this level. But it's not out of the realm of possibility for D'Angelo Henderson to break Danny Woodhead's NCAA record for consecutive games with a touchdown. Now, I will say this, in all fairness to Danny Woodhead, his level of domination of his competition seems to be a little bit higher. As I'm looking at Mike Kaywood's, the outstanding SID for Coastal Carolina, his game notes for this weekend against Charleston Southern, D'Angelo's 21 consecutive games with a touchdown, in that span, 32 touchdowns. Okay? Danny Woodhead's 38 consecutive games with a touchdown, 106.
You like that?
I do like that.
You like that?
That's pretty dominant performance, Mr. Woodhead. My goodness. But that's also, if that's another example of a small running back finding a niche in the NFL from a lower level of football. And D'Angelo hasn't been used a whole heck of a lot as a pass catcher, but some of his catches, some of his touchdowns in that run of his 31 touchdowns in that streak, three of them were receiving touchdowns. So that's the kind of thing with D'Angelo Henderson. The precedent is there for smaller running backs making it to the NFL, especially from lower levels of football. You know, if he learns how to become the asset that Danny Woodhead is in the passing game, he might have a shot.
Say our fans are smart. Good gosh.
Listen, I'm stunned. There's a 0% chance I would have known that. Like I said, the only reason I knew that is because Mike Kaywood, the SID for Coastal Carolina, put it in the game notes today. And I was taking a look at it because I always pore over the game notes before I interview Coach Moglia. Like, I got to come up with good questions when I talk to Moglia because he's a lot smarter than I am. And if he can sense what I've got coming, like if he can read the signal from the catcher and know that I'm going fastball, I mean, he's just, I'm going to get the be a man speech, right? I got to come up with really good questions for Coach Moglia to keep the conversation, you know, away from his talking points for the game.
We're going to need to go like that old show Stump the Schwab level questions next week and be name 19 out of the 30 people that made the...
Well, it has to have narrative importance to the overall show, Brian, because I can't just drop that trivia question and go back to talking about baseball. Like, we got to talk about football. And Coastal Carolina, should be noted this weekend, they only have two teams on their schedule as of right now, their regular season schedule, that are currently in the top 25 in the FCS coaches poll right now. Charleston Southern's number 19. Western Illinois is number 23. They beat Western Illinois by a touchdown at home. So now they're on the road where they lost the last time they were at Charleston Southern. They can't stop the run at all. They've given up 270 and a buck 90 on the ground in back-to-back games. And they're going up against a triple option team that runs the football pretty well. But I will say this, and we'll get into this conversation more later in the week. They've been putting one eye on Charleston Southern for a while. They installed some option practices over the summer, and they did some during the bye week as well. So I thought it was very interesting. Like, usually most coaches and players will say, oh, no, we're only focused on this weekend. No disrespect to Monmouth. In their bye week, they looked at Charleston Southern. They were doing option practices. So I thought that was very interesting, and I'm glad that they got by Monmouth.
It's probably about a 0% chance you got Moglia to admit that, though.
That would have backfired. Well, you know what? The players admitted it. They didn't say Charleston Southern. They said option. That's how they made it seem less like they were looking at Charleston Southern ahead of time.
Yeah.
Because Kennesaw State runs the triple option also, new Big South member. I didn't even think Kennesaw was a state, but... They're in the Big South for the last year that Coastal is in it. 843-652-3776. We can get back into this conversation. We're going to reset it here. Here is Dan Mullen, the head coach of the Mississippi State Bulldogs, at a press conference earlier today, is apparently never going to disclose player injuries again.
You may have answered this already, but do you expect maybe Gabe and
I expect everybody to play. And I'll never comment on an injury again because you guys obviously don't need me to comment on injuries because you know more than I do. And you report more than I would ever say for the benefit of young people's benefits, not get a scoop out for their futures. So we'll never comment on an injury in this program again, so please don't ever ask.
Some finality in that. That's not what you expect from the leader of an SEC football program to just get hot-headed with a reporter and say, I am never going to tell you this information again. Putting a scoop in front of a young kid's future. And I tend to agree with JC's call at the end of the first segment because the coach has way more to gain by not disclosing an injury. And the only thing that you could potentially sell me on is like, okay, say the offensive lineman's got a bum ankle and the other team knows that he's got a right ankle problem. At the bottom of a pile, someone can start tweaking on his right ankle instead of actually going for the ball. I guess that happens sometimes, but you know what else happens in the bottom of the pile? People try and poke each other's eyes out, right? And I just don't like the idea of a college athlete who is not getting paid, being put under the pressure of playing, and the press not even knowing. And when you are surprised by somebody not playing because of an injury, it's, oh, well, where did that come from? Whereas in the NFL, when you know somebody's questionable, it's not crazy. Now, Sammy Watkins is a little at odds with that process right now, which we can get into next segment. My goodness, someone needs to take social media. Someone just needs to sit Sammy Watkins down for a while. Get into that next segment. But I 100% agree with what JC said. The coach has everything to gain in that situation. It puts the athlete in a precarious position. And it also gets into this. And as much as I love Steve Spurrier, he kind of had this attitude toward the local media as well, that it was your job to basically help the team, right? He stops talking to Ron Morris in interviews because Ron Morris reported on Bruce Ellington. Whether it was true or not is kind of an odd way to behave. And he did, he closed practices this year in the offseason, and he got mad at the state for publishing a Georgia beat writer's opinion on South Carolina, and he said, we've let the enemy into our newspaper. I'm like, no, Spurrier, the state newspaper is not under jurisdiction of your football program. It's their job to report independently, and the fans enjoy the fact that it's non-biased coverage, right? That they actually find out what's happening at South Carolina's program. With Dan Mullen there, he's mad at the reporter for doing his job. It's not the reporter's job to help Mississippi State win. It's his job to be a conduit between the fan, the readers of his newspaper, and the team. That's his job. And disclosing an athlete's injury is not putting a young man's future in jeopardy. If anything, I would think that not disclosing it puts the kid in a precarious situation, that he feels even more like he has to play if the injury isn't acknowledged publicly. And the other thing, Dan Mullen, if you're tired of the media reporting on your team and having to deal with press conferences, just volunteer to take less money. You know, just say, you know what, I'm in this to win games and to play football, and I hate the media. You get the sense that a lot of coaches are like that, right? Well, guess what's not a multi-million dollar job? Coaching a football team that nobody cares about. So if nobody can ever have information on Mississippi State football because you refuse to cooperate, there's going to be less money in it for you. And I just don't understand why coaches at the major college level don't understand that media responsibilities are part of what grows the sport. And that's the difference between you and a track coach who makes 50 grand, is the fact that people care and want to read your articles in a newspaper. Some of my best friends are track coaches. Love the guys. They're purely doing it for the love of the game because they don't have Dan Mullen's $4 million a year salary. I mean, my goodness, what? Is it that hard for you to say, oh, well, Prescott's got an ankle problem? I mean, I have no idea if that was the player or not that is at question here, but it just seems ludicrous. And I will say this before someone fires off, well, you're a Tar Heel fan. Yeah, Fedora doesn't talk about injuries. It's the same problem. Fedora will literally, the head coach of UNC, will just say, I do not comment on injuries. I will tell you if they are out for the season. If not, I consider the rest of my players available. And I think that's ridiculous. Now, the NHL has a system where they are required to report if something is an upper body injury or a lower body injury. Someone can have like 9 shattered ribs and like no teeth and those guys play. I guess it's just a different culture. But man, I just, like JC, I have a hard time with someone who's not getting paid feeling that pressure from coaches to play. And I think that's increased by not having the injuries disclosed. And if you're tired of the media, then pick a new gig. That's part of it. That's why you make $4 million a year. 843. Oh, I wasn't ready for the Clint Eastwood hot take meter there. 843-652-3776. If you have thoughts on that situation, happy to hear from you. And also, Sammy Watkins takes to social media yesterday. Was it or was it not a mistake? I think I betrayed my position. It's coming up next in Sound Off. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. Got into discussion earlier in the show about D'Angelo Henderson and the record streak that he's on right now. That was our Lincoln Park Bar and Grill trivia question of the day. Danny Woodhead ended up being the answer. That's who Hop's chasing now. Now that Hop has the FCS record, Danny Woodhead has 17 more games with touchdowns as of right now, though. Hop's put together 21 straight games with a touchdown. That's pretty solid. I think we can all agree that's pretty good. Hop has done okay for himself as a Chanticleer. But Danny Woodhead, 38 straight games. So Hop has to chase this into the playoffs and then for the majority of his senior season at Coastal Carolina. And it's hard to believe. By the way, like, it feels like Hop has been at Coastal for like 20 years. It's like the duration that Shane Battier was at Duke. You're like, man, how are you still here? Tyler Hansbrough at UNC. But that's because with all this, the commonality between all those guys is they made plays immediately. You know? When you contribute as a freshman, it really seems like you are left like 40 years old still playing in college. Apparently Chatterton State, again, I didn't know Chatterton was a state, but Chatterton State is in Nebraska. So Danny Woodhead, just working folks up at Chatterton State. Crazy to think about that. But hey, hopefully that's Hop's future. I mean, if he makes it to the NFL and is productive like that, that'd be incredible. We need more Shanthers, by the way. We got Tolbert, we got Norman. We need more Shanthers. I don't know.
They had a safety a while ago, a few years back, too.
Quentin Teal.
That's yeah.
Anyway, so Sammy Watkins, we covered him last week. He talks to his agent and says, hey, how can I get the football more? Then he complains to both the coaching staff and to a beat writer that he's not getting the football more. He says the team is embarrassing him and themselves by not getting him the football more, that he wanted Julio targets, a.k.a. 20 looks a game, and that he would be just like Julio and Odell Beckham Jr. if he got targeted that much. And he goes out in the next game, catches a touchdown, but on that same play, he strains his calf. So he's out right now. And he posted on Instagram today. This is his Instagram post, which has now been deleted. So thankfully, somebody from the Bills said, you're out of your mind, Sammy. But this is his complete post. I'll quote it and end quote it here. Quote, to all the people that have a problem with me being injured, you guys go out there and play. This sport, it's a 100% injury rate. I'm not the first person or last person that's gone be injured. Difference from me and you guys, y'all mad, and I'm not. Get a life and go to work. Stop worrying about my job because I'm good on this end and forever will be. Losers, most of you just wish to be in this position, so continue working y'all little jobs the rest of y'all lives. Since everyone wants a response here, go on, have a blessed day. Well, he did, end quote, he did tell us to have a blessed day. And I just, like, Sammy Watkins, what are you thinking, man? You can't go to the media and say that you need 20 targets a game and that the organization is embarrassing themselves because they traded up to get you or not getting the football again. You can't, to fans that buy your jersey, you can't publish a note saying, y'all mad and I'm not, get a life, go to work. I mean, you can't throw that out there. You can't just categorize people as losers. And I guess he's writing that message to people telling him that he should play. But that's just such a bad look on so, so many levels. And just like what we were talking about with Dan Mullen, a big reason why these guys, I'm not going to say that playing in the NFL, I'm not going to say that being a college coach aren't stressful and your interaction with the media has to be brutal. Like, I've never been on the opposite end of this conversation. Like, track and field has zero media coverage. Like, I've never been in a situation where I've been criticized by any entity, and I'm not a big enough sports talk show host for media critics to listen to my show and tear me a new one. Yeah, like, I mean, somebody's, like, complained, but what I'm talking about is, like, Richard Deitch, Sports Illustrated. Like, there's a narrow niche that is media criticism. People are like, oh, this person's not any good. Like, nobody criticizes the work that I do, so I can't feel what Sammy Watkins and Dan Mullen are going through, but I would like to think that if I were in that position, that I would know that it comes with the territory. And especially when you are not able to play, like, just focus on healing up and getting back to your team after having that blow up about targets. And Sammy Watkins is that good. He is going to get away with this. And it pales in comparison to Greg Hardy's level of insubordination. Pales in comparison. But it does beg the question, like, come on, dude, are you in this with the Bills organization or not? 843-652-3776. If you could give Sammy Watkins some advice, any advice right now, just you're coaching Sammy Watkins, and this is not a Rex Ryan role-playing game. Like, you are Coach Brian Nelson, you're Coach Lewis Woodard. What do you tell Sammy Watkins? I mean, I think I would just tell him, like, listen, Sammy, do you like the $4.5 million you're making this year? Do you want to give this back, or do you want to keep it? You want to keep it? Well, understand that fans, both good and bad, buying tickets to go see your games in Buffalo, to wear your jersey, that helps, in the end, finance the $4.5 million a year that you make. So you got to take the good with the bad. There's a lot of praise that you get. When you catch a shoestring touchdown, that's on YouTube, that's on SportsCenter's Top 10, everybody wants a piece of you, right? I'm sure he has plenty of young ladies inquiring as to his status in Buffalo. All of those trappings of fame. Can you not deal with a couple of people on Instagram saying, hey, man, how about you stop being weak and play? Like, just realize that you're on top of the mountain and just ignore those people. Why? Like, because you belittle yourself when you directly communicate with people that are not on your level. And the other thing that I wonder about here, another piece of this puzzle, is Clemson is such a interesting and supportive fan base, like up there in the upstate. Like, the fans stream down onto the field after every game. In a tradition, it's just everybody talks about family, family, family when they go and visit Clemson. And I just wonder if because he was so good at Clemson and because of the nature of that fan base, if he was never criticized. I mean, yeah, he sat out two games due to the off-season marijuana issue, but that didn't set Clemson's season back, so no one was really getting after him. Or is that just the nature of the fan base and the Bills fans are a little more impatient? But man, learn how to survive in the NFL ecosystem, dude. Like, it's, and the other thing about not getting the football, he was matched up with DeAndre Hopkins and Martavis Bryant in college. There were games where he didn't get the football a heck of a lot. I mean, his sophomore season at Clemson, DeAndre Hopkins blew him away statistically. Like, you would think, and he didn't complain to Taj Boyd about not throwing the football. So it does make me wonder, like, does this dude like Buffalo? Like, how, just such an odd situation.
I just think it's a bad idea to be belittling people's careers. Like, he's taking shots at their livelihood. I mean, we all love football, and football's great, and it's the best sport, and everyone cares so much about it. But in reality, it's really not that big part of society. There's a lot of people doing a lot of other jobs that are a bigger impact to society than catching a ball 10 times, not even 10 times a game, one day a week.
Well, right. That's the whole justification. There are a whole lot of people in life that work hard and don't get compensated. $4.5 million.
Deal with a lot worse BS on a daily basis than someone being like, get out there and play or suck it up.
Yeah,
like,
there's some variation of this topic that happens at least every 2 months. You know, hey, these guys are making millions of dollars, and police, teachers, firemen, soldiers, all those things. I mean, people that are essential for our lives and put their lives in harm's way or have critical roles in society are underpaid. And that's not something like football is not the cause of that. And I don't ever use that as an argument for a reason that those guys are overpaid. But at the same time, realize that people who are not in the NFL game, their interest is the only thing that makes you a millionaire. Their interest is the only thing that makes you a millionaire. These networks that are throwing crazy amounts of money to try to get live football rights to the ACC, to the Big Ten, to the SEC, Fox, CBS, Yahoo streams a game in London. I mean, all of these networks are trying to get a piece of the NFL and college football because they understand how important live football is because of who? Us, the fans, the people watching it. There's good ones of us, there's crazy ones, there's terrible ones. But that mix all together, that's what's paying the bills, Sammy Watkins.
It's like we all deal with angry people in our jobs, regardless of what it is, as a coworker, customer. Like, get some thicker skin. Like, no, and no matter what career you do, if you're going to get that upset over someone calling you a loser for something that's not really even your fault, like being injured or whatever your job pertains to, you're never going to succeed if you just get mad every single time someone says something negative to you.
It seems crazy because Sammy Watkins was a 5-star recruit. Like, surely in high school someone chanted something mean at him. Like, surely some of like fans on an opposing team's like message board or something like talk trash to him. Like, surely a DB's talk trash to him. Surely a South Carolina or a Georgia fan said something to him at some point when he was at Clemson. It's baffling to me that at this stage of his life, like, this is stuff that you would expect a 17 or an 18-year-old to do, like, in his freshman year in college. This is not something you'd expect a second-year pro to do.
That's the only thing I can kind of give him, not a pass, but eases it a little. He's still only 22 years old, and at that age, I mean, a lot of people still say a lot of dumb things and do a lot of dumb things. So I'm going to chalk it up mostly to that, but obviously the position that he's in illuminates it more.
Oh, he's so talented that he's going to get a lot of opportunities. It's a good thing, because if he were a fringe-level NFL wide receiver and he's complaining about fans and wanting more touches, then he might find himself out of the NFL. There is another Power 5 college football opening. What does that mean for South Carolina? What does that mean for Clemson? I'll give my 2 cents coming up next. back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3. The team Wednesdays on Sound Off are presented by Lincoln Park Bar and Grill. Lincoln Park has the 30 TVs that you would expect from a sports bar, but the quality of the food, that is what makes Lincoln Park sports dining. Lincoln Park, located off the bypass, across from Queens Harbor in Surfside Beach. And don't forget, tonight is their trivia night. Wednesday, starting at 8 p.m., they give out a $25 cash prize to the winner. Now, a really, really sad story today. There were some sad stories today, not just Edison Volquez's father passing yesterday, and him and his Royals ended up winning, was some good to come out of it, although that pales in comparison to losing a father, no doubt. Jerry Kill, who is the head coach of the Minnesota Golden Gophers, who I think is one of the most underrated coaches in college football. I mean, to get Minnesota up to the 9 or 10 wins level as he did last year, based on where the program was when he inherited it, is one of the best turnaround jobs ever, or at least in recent memory. I mean, just terrific coach. He has been dealing with seizures since 2005, and he has fought through it the entire time. And a lot of people have said, hey, this guy needs to retire because what if he dies coaching a game? Like, that puts, like, what if his players see that? What if the fans see that? Like, that was an actual, like, conversation that people were having 2 or 3 years ago. And he ends up retiring today, and his press conference was just heartbreaking because the guy finally has his dream job. He's worked his entire life to be a Big Ten head coach, and he's winning. And finally he gets to the point where he just realizes that the stress that coaching puts on his body, he can't get through it anymore. And what that does is that adds Minnesota as a job that's open, to Maryland, that's a job that's open, to Southern California, to a job that's open, to South Carolina, that's a job that's open, to Miami, that's a job that's open. Those are, and that isn't even dealing with a lot of fringe jobs where coaches could get fired at the end of the season for not performing well enough. That is, by my count, 5 legit Power 5 jobs open right now this minute. And that's going to create a musical chair situation that's going to be incredible. Like, listen, if Brian Kelly goes from Notre Dame to the NFL, which could potentially happen, I mean, that would just throw this whole thing into a tailspin too. And what that means is, for Clemson, I know everybody's thinking I'm going to weigh in on South Carolina here. For Clemson, man, Brent Venables might be gone. Because not only do you have to deal with those jobs getting filled, like, let's say Fuente goes from Memphis to Miami, then who's going to coach Memphis? That might be the perfect opening gig for Brent Venables, right? So when all those jobs are open, there's a lot of transition. There's a lot of turnover in the coaching ranks. And it's unfortunate for South Carolina to have an open job at the same time when Maryland, Minnesota, Miami, Southern California are all open as well. And I think that we can get into the job debate, which one is more valuable, which one would you rather take if you were head coach? I think Southern California is the answer. But amongst those other ones, can they get a better candidate than Maryland or Miami? That's a question. That's a legit question. And they are now competing against another school in that tier, in the Big Five, Minnesota, and there are guys that haven't been fired yet. So there's going to be a really big-time musical chairs, and I think Clemson, if they're going to win a championship, I think it has to be this year. Deshaun Watson is a sophomore. He might only be a 3-year player because he could be a pro draft pick. Mackenzie Alexander, Shaq Lawson are projected first-round picks. That team is filthy. They've gone over 400 yards passing and 400 yards throwing in different games this year. You lost Chad Morris last year. You could lose Venables this year. I mean, I think if Clemson's going to do it, I think it has to happen this year. I'm not saying they're going to fall off a cliff, but I think their window might be right now, especially if you have to replace Venables. All right, call of the day, JC, for ripping Dan Mullen a new one.
The only person who is potentially damaged by reporters uncovering injuries is the man who's making money off the backs of kids who aren't getting paid. Dan Mullen, shut up.
Amen. You know, I'd like to think I'm pretty good at this job, but sometimes I'm like, hey, a caller just said what I said better and more entertaining. JC earned the microphone today. JC should be able to host tomorrow. Anyways, Sports Talk coming up next. Corn Blue McCreary, stay here.